You can't catch fish. You can't catch fish. You can't catch fish.
Welcome.
You can't catch fish.
To Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and we've been able to round up a couple of people that are out in the field. I think Jason was out guiding this morning, and he took a break for it to come on. And John Prochnow, who is the director of product development for Berkley, is on his way to Europe, and he's pulled over to the side of the road. I assume that you're in a car, not the airplane yet, and he's going to visit with us for a while. Anything that anybody wants to know about the science of fishing, in particular fish, and how to make a fish strike at bait, John's got all the answers. So, John, we appreciate you coming on and joining us.
That's great. I always like it when I can talk with people that really enjoy the fishing experience as much as I do, and it's always a pleasure to be on your show, John. Mm-hmm.
Now, Jason, you are very good at what you do. You know, you're a guide. You're specialized in fly fishing and fly fishing for bass, so you understand that aspect of it, and we're going to be talking to you maybe a little bit about, you know, flies and how to use them and what attracts the fish. But let's start off with John, and Jason, you probably have some questions also. Gosh, there's just so much area. Let's try and cut it down a little bit. First of all, John, why don't you give us an idea of what a fish has and what it uses to find food?
Well, fish uses a number of different senses. They have some of the same ones we do, plus they've got a few extra. Obviously, they've got the olfactory, which is the scent or the smell and taste, so the nose and mouth. They've also got lateral lines, which actually pick up vibration in the water, so that they can actually feel things that are vibrating in the water through the waves. Mm-hmm. And that's a line that runs completely down the fish's body, usually from head to tail. And you can see it on some different species, like black bass. You'll see the separation right in the middle of the side. Well, that's where the lateral line runs on most fish.
Now, you mentioned smell. You know, we're thinking of in breathing air in through our nose. I don't think a fish does that. So how does it smell?
It uses a similar type of system. It still has to get something passed over its nasal passages, but it needs water to pass over it as opposed to air. And so, for instance, for us to be able to smell things, and for our nerves to be stimulated in our nasal passages, we need the chemicals and products to be air volatile. So they have to almost dissolve in the air so that we can detect them. Well, fish is different. They don't live in an air environment, so they've got to have the chemicals that they are trying to perceive or the smells that they're trying to detect need to be water-soluble so that they can be detected. So that's why a lot of the research we deal with, John, has to do with water-soluble type of compounds so that the fish can actually smell them, whereas we can't actually smell the same thing the fish does, or the fish can't actually smell the things like we do.
Well, you know, I know Berkley has put a tremendous amount of effort into some of those different scents that you guys put into those baits. And Berkley Gulp being one of them, and as a guide, I use a lot of Gulp for certain situations. I use some for freshwater and some for saltwater. How much difference is there between your scents from freshwater to saltwater?
Well, Jason, we actually use some of the same basic type materials or actives. I like to tell people to give them something to relate to. It's very similar. Fish will all relate to certain types of things, base materials, we call them, or base attractants. They're similar to people in that people, for the most part, they'll all relate to and eat meat and potatoes if they aren't vegetarian. But what we like to put on our meat and potatoes is different types of seasonings. For instance, some people like will eat things that are more salty, some like sweet, some like sour. And different species of fish, I kind of put it as, are like different nationalities of people in that the different types of seasonings they like. But that isn't to say that a largemouth bass won't eat the same thing as a crappie or a bluegill or even a calico bass, because they will, just the very same way that we as people will eat Chinese, we'll eat Mexican, we'll eat Italian, we'll eat American, because there's still some of the same base ingredients in there that taste good to us, but the different seasonings are what kind of specialize it towards a specific species of fish. So a little bit of a long answer to your question, but yes, the fish have some of the very same things that they key on, and we put that in everything. But depending on the species of fish we're targeting at, freshwater, saltwater, bass, catfish, trout, salmon, depends on the other chemical ingredients or, as I put it, seasonings that we put in there that kind of make it more tailor-made for those different species.
Yeah, I've found over the years also a big advantage of using scents like that with Berkley Gulp is the fish will actually hold on to the bait longer, not necessarily making it, you know, you're getting more bites, because a lot of these bites can be reaction baits where there's, you know, reaction bites where they're actually going by color or speed of presentation. But those fish will hang on to that bait longer to give the fisherman a chance to set the hook. And I found that to be a big advantage with some of those scented baits.
Wow, interesting. Now, John, let's talk about vision for a minute. Of course, when you're under the water, you don't see the same, but how good is a fish's sight? Obviously, it depends on the depth and the water clarity, but how much do they use sight for identifying food?
Well, you are absolutely right. The depth and water clarity or turbidity makes a huge difference. But in general, the clearer the water is and the more light there is available, the more the fish will rely on their sense of sight to locate food. And it's a distance thing. In the clear water environments, you can attract a fish through vision, sight, flash, farther than you can the scent and flavor at times, because they can see that, whether the current's going away from to them or whatever, from wherever they're at, they can see if it's clear and not turbid. Once they get to a point where they've seen it and they're coming up on it, now some of the other senses take place. Can I smell it? Can I actually taste it? That type of thing. So it's a matter of trying to get all of the fish's senses engaged or fooled, if you're a fisherman, trying to fool them into believing that that bait that you've got there is actual natural food that they want to eat.
Mm-hmm. Now, John, is their vision similar to ours? Do they see colors? Is it, you know, or is there a difference?
There's a huge difference. On some species and on some species, there isn't a huge difference. But they use the same thing that we do, rods and cones, to determine the different colors and lights and darknesses and things like that. But depending on the species of fish and how many rods and cones and what the distribution of it is on all those, determines whether they can see colors and what colors they can see better than others. So there are certain species of fish that rely more heavily on sight than other species of fish. For instance, trout and salmon rely quite heavily on the sense of sight, whereas a catfish or even a sturgeon does not rely quite as much, and they're more on the olfactory.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we're almost running out of time, but I know that when you're fishing for halibut in Alaska, you take maybe half a salmon, drop it to the bottom and wait, and that the scent brings the halibut in from, you know, sometimes half a mile or a mile, maybe 2 or 3 miles away. So obviously that makes a difference. We are going to have to take a real quick break, but fascinating stuff. We want to make sure that you stay tuned. John Prock now is going to be coming back, and also we have Jason Grip on the line, and we're going to see if we can get a little bit of bass fishing in with Mark Lassane in a couple more minutes. So a lot of fun stuff. So stay tuned and make sure that you can go to fishtalkradio.com and find out where to find us. We're all over the internet. Yeah, we're all over broadcast stations. We're all over everywhere. So no excuse. You probably want to listen to the show again because it's hard to take it all in at one time. And we'll be right back with John and Jason on Fish Talk Radio.
The Santa Barbara Channel offers some of the most productive sport fishing in the world. Channel Island Sport Fishing offers the most boats to enjoy it. Call 805-383-1612. At Channel Island Sport Fishing, you pick the time and place you want to go. Nearshore halibut, calico bass, and rockfish, or fish the Channel Islands for white sea bass and yellowtail. For whale watching and private charters, Channel Island Sport Fishing in Oxnard has clean, modern boats with professional, friendly crews. Make your reservations for a deep sea adventure by calling 805-383-1612.
The East Cape of Baja, Mexico is world famous for sport fishing. Dorado, tuna, wahoo, marlin, sailfish, roosterfish, and pargo. The Van Wormer resorts make dreams come true at a price all can afford. Hotel Palmas de Cortez, Playa del Sol, and Hotel Punta Colorado have the biggest and best sport fishing fleet in all of Mexico. Call toll-free to 877-777-TUNA to find out how affordable world-class fishing can be. The finest resorts and the best boats in East Cape. Call 877-777-TUNA.
Lake Cochuma is a California treasure. Bald eagles, deer, egrets, foxes, wild turkeys play on the banks and in the trees. Red ear, bluegill, bass, and catfish inhabit the waters. Rainbow trout are planted on a regular basis and easily caught from boat or shore. Lake Cochuma Boat Rentals is a key to a successful day on the lake. Call 805-688-4040 for information. Tackle, skiff, or pontoon boat rental. Call Craig at 688-4040. 20 minutes north of Santa Barbara, Cochuma Boat Rentals for a day to remember.
World-class golf, fishing, and diving in the clear, warm waters of the Sea of Cortez with a true five-star resort. The Grand Heritage Hotel and Resort at Costa Baja, great value and without the hustle of other parts of Baja. On the white sand beach with Espirito Santos Island minutes away. Signature restaurants, pools, and accommodations for an intimate weekend, weddings, or corporate events. On the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
If you're looking for a magical and unique gift for someone special, look no further than the skies above you. Santa Barbara Soaring specializes in glider rides, making memories that last a lifetime. Experience Santa Barbara, the San Ynez Valley, and Central Coast with the silence of soaring. Purchasing a gift certificate is just a couple of clicks away. Visit SantaBarbaraSoaring.com. Pick your ride and the certificate will be sent directly to you just in time for the holidays. Let Santa Barbara Soaring help you provide the gift they'll never forget. SantaBarbaraSoaring.com.
The water on the lake is smooth as glass. We might catch a sunny, we might catch a bass. Oh, what do you say? What do you say? What do you say? Let's go fishing.
Come on, let's go fishing.
There in the water, look at it shine. There goes a big one, that one of mine. Play out my reel now.
Just welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. Wow, this is exciting stuff. Jason, as knowledgeable as you are, I bet you're learning some things. Did you have any questions for John?
Yeah, you know, it's always nice to hear different opinions about colors on bass fishing, and I know bass tend to blend some of the same colors together. I would love to hear your, you know, scientific approach on what you think about how bass see different colors from dark to light. And I'm not necessarily speaking because of water clarities, because obviously when the water is really clear, you know, you change your colors to stained water. But do they see particular colors together, or what do you think about that?
Well, I can't tell you exactly how a bass sees colors, because obviously we don't see the world through a bass's eyes. But we can, from our tests and from what we know through personal experiences of fishing and things, that color definitely makes a difference. And in all the studies that we've done, the more contrasting colors that you can have seem to be better for the fish to be able to see it. And what I mean by that is you want something that actually contrasts with the environment you're in. That's why a lot of times they say it at night, where, for instance, in the southern part of the U.S., night fishing is very big down there, and they use a lot of very dark-colored baits, the dark black purples and the blacks and things like that, because it contrasts against the light that's coming in through the top. and so they can see it easier, whereas the lighter color baits kind of fade away in those types of environments where it's like that. But the big thing that we have found in some of the things that we've done is that it is contrast. For instance, if you have baits and you break those up with strong contrasting colors, that sometimes that will trigger an illicit bite mm-hmm. or a strike, whereas just a solid color does not tend to possibly have that type of effect. So, John,
we're going to be talking to Mark Lassane from Bass Angler Magazine a little bit more about bass, but mm-hmm. I have one, maybe a basic question. Obviously, fish take bait because they're hungry. Is there any other reason that they'll attack a bait?
Oh, sure. You bet. The big thing is, as Jason said earlier, reactionary strikes. You surprise a fish or something comes up by them real quickly, they'll lash out at it at times, depending on their mood. Fish will have moods just like people will have moods, in that they, at times, they're just lethargic and they want to just sit down there on the bottom when they aren't feeling good and just watch things go by.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, if they're up and alert, if something comes by, they will strike at it right away because it's startled them. Or even if they're territorial a little bit, can be, depends at different times of the year. But the other thing is they're opportunistic. Fish are very opportunistic. They live out there in a world where they have to survive and they can't go to the grocery store. They can't have somebody deliver the food to them. So they have to be opportunistic. Anytime a meal comes by that is fairly easy and they view it mm-hmm. as something that they need to survive, they're going to go ahead and react yeah. to the opportunity.
Okay, so they can be aggressive other than just when they're hungry. And
definitely.
I believe that we do have Mark Lassane from Bass Angler Magazine that's listening in with us. And Mark can kind of join in the conversation. We have John Prack now, Director of Product Development. We've got a couple of minutes. So let's see if Mark has some questions or comments. Mark, we're talking about what attracts a fish to the hook. So I'm sure that you've got plenty of experience, especially with bass, if you've got a couple of comments or you have some questions for John.
Well, you know, I feel that the bass react, like John was talking about, I think, just a minute ago. You know, bass react, I kind of picture them like a cat when you throw something across the floor and they chase it out of curiosity and grab it. And I feel that bass do that same thing. Also, like I heard him saying, they're opportunistic feeders. That, you know, if something goes by, you know, they don't have the opportunity to run to McDonald's and pick up something. They just have to take out whatever comes by or whatever they swim into. So,
you know,
I agree.
One of the...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jason.
One of the big things going on right now is this hunt for the world record bass. It's become such a big part of the bass fishing industry, especially in California, because we're producing so many 20-pound-plus bass out of here. And some of the only ways you get those big girls to bite is, one, with swim baits imitating trout, because that's what those really big fish are feeding on. And number two is catching them off their beds during the spawn. And they're... the bass changes so dramatically during the spawn to where if anything gets close to that bed where they're either planning on laying those eggs or protecting those eggs, they eat it. And they're either eating it to carry it away from their bed just to protect those eggs. It's not usually because they're feeding at that point. It's more out of an anger type mm-hmm. situation. So, you know, as the seasons go through and each time period of the year changes, their type of the way that they eat changes dramatically from spring when the spawn hits, from fall to when you're getting, you know, late summer when you're getting a really good topwater bite and they're willing to come up to the surface to eat, from winter to when they move out and go really deep and that's when you need more of a feeding type bite. When they're up shallow in the fall for good topwater, that's a really good time for reaction type bite. So as an angler, you really have to be flexible on how you're approaching these bass to make sure you tune into what, you know, they're doing at that particular time of year, because it's so different, you know, every season.
I have a question. Basically, the question is, when do you set the hook? Now, John sent me some baits that I used in Baja that I can't remember what they were. They're about 6-7 inches long, and I put one out along with some live bait, and we're troving for Dorado. And a Dorado came up and actually took a bite out of it and then came back and took the bait, which, you know, which means that he liked it. Now, but generally, the plastic that you have, you know, they put some sense in them, but normally they just kind of, you know, swallow them and spit them out. So I don't know if who should answer the question, but, you know, obviously, if you don't react when you're supposed to, but you can also react too quickly and pull a bait away before they get a chance to get hooked. So who wants to jump in on that? When do you set the hook?
Well, I can kind of go over that. You know, this bass bite different. You have smallmouth, spotted bass, and largemouth, and each species bites a little bit different. Spotted bass, you know, they call them tail grabbers, you know, for a reason. Spots generally will, like, grab a tail of a bait, and you think you have them, and you set the hook, and you come back with half of a bait. Largemouth are more of a engulfing type bite. So usually when they get it, they usually have it in their mouth. And generally, when you if you're fishing a jig, you'll feel them, and then you feel them, and really what you're feeling is them spitting out the bait rather than sucking it in.
Mm.
So like your Dorado, when you miss it, you know, he may have had it, and you just missed it, or he grabbed it and let it go. You know, ocean fish, I think, bite a little bit different. They maybe bite a little more like spotted bass than largemouth.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Well, no, that makes perfect sense. And let me ask Jason real quickly about if you're using a fly and setting the hook. I mean, obviously you got this little tiny little fly, but is there any universals that you use, Jason?
Yeah, you know, there's different ways to set the hook with flies, depending on, you know, let's just talk about bass flies. Some of these big topwater flies, they're huge. And you do need a heavier fly rod. You need to set the hook harder. Compared to if we're using really small type streamers, little bait fish patterns, I can get away with a lighter fly rod and you don't quite have to set the hook hard enough. But, you know, every species varies as well, too. And like you were saying, the way of bass bites, and we fish for largemouth for the most part, but they engulf that fly when they,
okay.
Their mouths are huge, they suck it in. So you're pretty much setting the hook right away on a fly. You don't wait. Where sometimes with certain types of plastics, when you're fishing traditional gear, you do have to wait a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let that bait get positioned better in his mouth, and it can be tricky. And then even when you're bed fishing for trophy bass, they might only grab half the bait and start swimming away with it and then
okay.
drop it.
Well,
it comes with experience.
But let me do this because we're going to have a break coming up just real quick. But while we still have John on the line, we're going to hold over for Mark and Jason, and we'll talk a little bit more about bass. But John, you are on your way to Europe because Berkeley is developing a carp bait. And I don't think we want to go too off in a long direction, but that's an interesting concept for us because, well, over here we don't really think of carp as so much of a sport fish as they do over there. So why don't you make a quick comments on that and what kind of a bait can you develop because they're very difficult to get them to grab.
Yeah, I can do that, John. We're in Europe, the carp fishing market is like the bass fishing market over here. It is there. Number one market, it's the number one sought after fish, and it's because they're so abundant and also because they're such fighters when you do get them hooked. The type of techniques they use are very, very different from what we use. As far as the baits, they still use rods and reels and lines, but the types of baits they put on those end of those lines are much more different.
Mm-hmm.
We use plastic baits and lures. They use boiled baits that are actually
okay.
hard like marbles and things.
Mm. Okay.
And drill holes in them and specific techniques, and they set out on the bank for days and
but they catch quite big fish up
into
the 50-pound range.
Well, we're going to bring you back on for that. You guys, we're going to run out of time in this segment. We're going to let John get up on his way because he's on his and he's stopped over by the side of the road. And then we're going to come back and we're going to continue on with Mark and with Jason. We'll talk a little bit about bass fishing then. Have a great time in Europe, John. We appreciate you joining in with us. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAHA.
For more than a century, sport fishermen have led the charge for conservation. From trout to marlin, anglers have worked to protect our natural resources and establish successful programs that benefit fish and fishermen. Today, this legacy is at risk unless we step up and lead the fight for real world conservation. That's what the Sport Fishing Conservancy is all about, doing what's best for fish and fishing and making sure anglers get the credit we deserve. Check out the Sport Fishing Conservancy and find out how you can help at sportcon.org.
It's time for you to take a real fun adventure. Join a hosted fishing adventure to Alaska or Baja with the staff of Fish Talk Radio. Real Fun Adventures can book you on any adventure you desire. Bring your fishing friends or meet new ones. Fish Talk Radio gets the best deals from our sponsors to give you the best possible price. Real Fun Trips are inclusive, easy, no-worry packages to the most popular fish grounds. Trips start around $600. Go to reelfunadventures.com.
Want to make your drive more exciting? It starts with Shell V-Power Premium Gasoline. It's Ferrari's choice for improved performance. Shell V-Power removes an average of 60% of performance-robbing gunk on intake valves left by low-quality premium gasolines. And it starts with your very first tank. The result is the kind of performance that gives you more excitement behind the wheel. Choose Shell V-Power Premium Gasoline today and let the excitement begin.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. What an exciting time we're having. And we're learning everything we need to know about fish and fishing. We have Mark on the line with us, Mark Lassane from Bass Angler Magazine. We're going to get him for a couple minutes, but he's pulled over the side of the road. So we're going to give him a couple minutes and let him take off to where he's going fishing, I think. And then we also have Jason Grupp on the line. So, Mark, let's go ahead and finish up a little bit with catching bass. We've been talking about bait and attracting the fish.
Okay, yeah, great. You know what, I have the boat hooked up right now. We're headed up to the lake as we speak. So right now we're moving into the wintertime, and, things are getting cold. The water's getting cold. If the water gets down below about 45, 44 degrees, the shads start dying. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you're fishing a lot of these lakes is the shad are dying, and they kind of they fall down the bottom. And that's the time when you want to use it like a jigging spoon. There's a spoon called a Hopkins spoon. Generally throw like a 3/4 ounce spoon, you throw it out, let it go all the way down the bottom, and then you hop it up off the bottom a little bit, which works really good. Also this time of year, a football jig with a like a twin tail Yamamoto grub trailer works really well. Even if the fish are down the bottom feeding on the crawfish, or they're feeding on those shad. Like we were talking about earlier, bass are opportunistic feeders. So if there's a whole bunch of shad down there and they see a jig going by and think it's a crawdad, a lot of times they will pick out that odd lure. They call it the odd man theory. There's a whole article written on that.
Great. Hey, Mark, before you take off, let's mention Bass Angler Magazine.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? If you guys really want to learn how to catch fish, and especially catch fish this winter, we have an issue of Bass Angler Magazine coming out in probably about 2 weeks. We have 30 great articles from the top pros all telling you how to catch them all winter long.
Cool. Well, the great thing is,
BassAnglerMag.com.
The great thing is, even if you have to drill a hole in the ice, you can pretty much always go fishing somewhere any time of the year. So we appreciate that, Mark. And we are going to let you go fishing. And right now we're going to go ahead and talk to Amy from Channel Island Sport Fishing and find out what's happening in this part of the world. And then we've got Scott Brown that's got some news from exciting stuff from Jeep. So thank you very much, Mark. And that web address again is BassAngler.com. BassMag.com.
BassAnglerMag.com.
BassAnglerMag.com. Okay. Anyway, do we have Amy on the line?
Hey, guys.
Oh, hi, Amy. Hey, you're on with Jason Grupp and myself, and we've been talking about things that attract fish to the bait, but what you're going to be talking a little bit about is even this time of the year, there's a lot of fun stuff going on in central southern California or along the Channel Islands area.
There are. There's still tons of fish being caught.
Mm-hmm.
We're still, you know, rolling them out when we can. It's been a little windy.
Now, normally we like to give them a little bit of a two-month break for rockfish, but that doesn't mean there's no fish to be caught. And that rockfish in this area is closed for 2 months. Is that starting on January 1st?
That's correct, yeah. I'll get a little vacation.
Okay, so what are you going to do?
Work.
Oh.
We do whale watching December through April, so
okay.
I'll be doing that.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is plenty of stuff going on in the Channel Islands. Right now, if you're going to be coming this direction, you ought to stop in. And for whatever reason, there's always a good time. And it's a little crisp, get warm, but we've had some beautiful sunny days. It's just a little cool.
Yeah, and it is a little bit chilly, but you get in the sunshine, it's not too bad.
There you go. Yeah. Now, how do people get in touch with Channel Islands? I know the phone number is, I've got it memorized, it's 386, no, wait. I know it, no, don't tell me, tell me. It is 382-1612.
That's it,
and
you got it.
That's in the 805 area code. And then Cisco's, can you spell that?
C-I-S-C-O-S.
Cisco's.com.
That's right.
And if you give them a call, you might be lucky and Amy will take care of you.
Absolutely, I'm always here.
You're awesome.
thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And now we are going to, as promised, we're going to talk to Scott Brown, and his job, believe it or not, if you want to call it that, is he represents Chrysler, Jeep, and Dodge in the Western United States. And Scott has arranged, hopefully, for me to use one of these coming up in a couple of weeks to drive up to Northern California. And I'm anxious, looking forward to it. I don't think he knows what it's going to be yet, but I know it's going to be fun. But, Scott, give us a little bit of an idea what's happening for 2014 vehicles.
Well, hey, John, how are you? Good to be with you. You know, lots of good stuff. The big news, you know, for Ram Trucks, and that's another one of the brands that, you know, Chrysler Group has grown the last couple of years, and I actually have seven brands that I kind of babysit out here on the West Coast, and Ram Trucks, most appropriate for your audience. The big news for 14 is a light-duty diesel engine, just this last week with Motor Trend gave it their Truck of the Year, which is a huge deal. You know, Chevy and GMC have new trucks. The Toyota Tundra came out with a new truck. And for us to win, you know, Truck of the Year for a second year in a row, which has never happened, and primarily because of this diesel engine. And, you know, Motor Trend tested it, and they got 28 miles per gallon on the highway out of a full-size truck.
Oh, that's what I need.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally amazing because just the, you know, the wind resistance and the roll resistance on a vehicle like that is not designed for gas mileage.
Right.
So who knows what that is there a chance that engine will be available in anything else?
Well, it's it's going to be in the Grand Cherokee, same engine. It's a 3-liter V6 turbo diesel. You know, 240 horsepower, 420 pound-feet of torque.
Wow.
It's made its way into the Grand Cherokee. Right now, that's the only two places, the Grand Cherokee, 2014 Grand Cherokee from Jeep, and then this Ram 1500.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jason, with 420 foot-pounds of torque, man, you could pull a travel trailer and a boat behind it, you know, up a 30-degree grade.
Well, yeah, that, you know, the reality is that people need to use their trucks, and I believe the tow rating on that truck is 9,200 pounds. You know, which
wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of boat.
Hey, I don't have a boat that big, so.
Well, I mean, we rated at that, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. You don't even want to get close to that.
Mm-hmm.
You can if you have to, and it's good to have, but yeah, you don't want to.
Now, because it's the truck of the year, and because it's kind of a new and exciting thing, how available is it? Can you?
Well, the reality is it's not going to be available till first quarter of next year.
So okay, well, that's just a month or two. Okay.
Yeah, it's not quite available yet. We're looking at early next year, having it come online, but you know, plenty of Hemi V8s, plenty of the V6 with the 8-speed, and that gets up to 25 mm-hmm. miles per gallon. Those are all available now, but wow. The diesel early next year.
Would you suggest someone stop into their dealer and order one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Not only that, I'm sure that you'll cut them a special deal if they heard it on Fish Talk Radio, won't you?
I'd love to.
Okay, no problem then. No problem. If any questions, call Scott.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
But now that's pretty exciting. Jason, did you have any questions? I know that you do a lot of guiding and traveling, and you know, a lot of times you have to take your own vehicle. And you know, maybe some tips if someone is buying a truck, what they should be looking for.
Well, four-wheel drive for sure. I'll never buy a truck again without one.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, especially when you're an angler, if you're starting out too, you just run into situations once in a while, especially at the ramp or whatnot, where you need that four-wheel drive.
So, yeah, even if you're not crawling over rocks, if your rear wheels are on a slippery slope, you could have a problem.
Yeah, and, you know, what we're facing in California right now is really low water levels. We're in a pretty serious drought where all of our lakes are really low, and these ramps are getting nasty. On my home lake, Lake Kachuma in California, the ramps, you know, we're down about 50 feet in water, and we're onto the third backup ramp, and it's gravel. It's getting pretty nasty, but I actually drive a Dodge and love my truck, and I had to turn on four-wheel drive the other day when it was raining, and I needed it. So it's one tip I have for the ramps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting point, especially, and I'm going to change gears a little bit and talk about SUVs, but you know, people have given us a little bit of grief with the Dodge Durango. You know, we still offer the Durango with a transfer case with low range, and most of our competitors, you know, from Ford and from GM, they've gone away and their full size SUVs are car based, you know, and don't have a low range. And the reason that we have that low range is just exactly what Jason was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You're pulling a boat out of a well. You're out in the sand, you know, pulling a camper with a toy hauler. There's going to be times when you wish you had low range, and it may be once or twice a year, but when you need it, you really need it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like that comment about, of course, with the transfer case and gearing it down. You know, when you get that kind of torque you're talking about, you could pull over trees.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's exciting. And then, you know, obviously, you know, what we're interested in is four-wheel drives and Jeeps and Dodge trucks. But you've also got some of the trucks. You've got some very unique things that I saw last time I saw you. You had some, you know, they've really designed it so that every ounce and every inch of it is utilized.
Yeah. You know, especially the Rams, you know, they've got storage, you know, the Ram box. So the areas around the wheel wells that is typically lost space, now we turn that into kind of a cargo area that's, you know, weather protected. It's got racks that go in there that can hold fishing rods or guns. There's little compartments underneath the rear seats. There's compartments in the rear floorboards that will actually hold a gun locker if you want to have a gun locker, or just, you know, for cold drinks. So
wow.
Yeah, every space, you know, in the doors there's storage containers. Underneath the front seat in the middle there's a storage container. You know, these are tools for you guys.
Well, hey, Scott, I've got a great idea. Why don't you give Jason and I one of those, and we'll go on a road trip to Baja.
You know, as long as you take me as your guide.
Okay. Okay, that's awesome.
Hey, Scott, one other thing. I've noticed that in the Dodge, because I came off of a Ford before, now I'm on a Dodge, the braking system of my Dodge truck is so strong. Have you guys, you know, beefed up the size of the brakes compared to most companies? Have you guys done more in that realm?
Mm-hmm. I can't really speak to the competitors. I just know that, yeah, we have ourselves taken a strong look at our brakes.
Well, Scott, it looks like we're out of time this time, but, you know, we appreciate you coming on. As a matter of fact, if you just want to hang on just for a minute, maybe you can answer that question.
Okay, great.
But you are listening to Fish Talk Radio. We appreciate you tuning in. And remember, you might want to listen to this again on webtalkradio.com.